Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
It's another beautiful Saturday afternoon, Friday when you hear this. We are coming to you live from the wonderful Paris Court Townhouse Centre, a centre like no other. This is the Sideshow. Get in touch, it's at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow and sideshow.com for the back catalogue. In my company today is a gentleman by the name of Ed Hick. Ed, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Ed. You've got the shorts on, you've got the Irish Mountaineering Club on. Are you a mountaineering kind of a guy?
As often as I can, but not often enough, you know, that kind of way.
Well, I kind of do and I kind of don't. You're talking to a guy who recorded a radio show in the middle of December at -3 Celsius overnight while camping without tents in the Wicklow Mountains as for no apparent reason, just because we felt like it. Are you at that level or are you kind of a hill walkery kind of a fella?
Oh, I've done that and more.
Have you? Yeah, okay. So, for those who aren't aware, what does Ed Hick do for a living?
Oh, sorry, for a living by day, normally week to week, I'm a pork butcher. That's what I do.
You say pork butcher. Do you have the butcher shop as we would traditionally know it? Is that it? Does it have the canopy coming out?
No, I'm afraid not. No. Wholesale is what I do. So I manufacture, I cure things, smoke things, make sausages, funky stuff.
How funky?
How funky do you want to get?
Well, let's go into it. What's the product range?
Well, probably the funkiest thing that I do is a thing bizarrely called bacon jam, which I know this is a bit cheeky, but I trade it being a mouthgasm. It's something that specifically I've designed the recipe to spark off your salt, sweet, sour, bitter, and umami taste buds. So everything at once. You know when you have a coffee and a slice of cake, you're doing bitter and sweet?
Yeah.
They work really well together. You know when you get a bag of chips, you put salt and you put sour on it in terms of the vinegar, and these things work together. But I'd never had all five at once in my mouth. It was a bit of an eyebrow raiser, to be honest.
It's very much an eyebrow raiser on this occasion as well, to be quite fair, Ed. I've never heard the words mouth and the other half word that you used go in the same algorithm together.
Remember where you heard it first.
I will indeed. I'll never forget it, funnily enough. Let's go to an entirely different place because you are involved with Bloom Fringe. I'll ask you that on two levels. What are you doing with Bloom Fringe?
Just in conversation with Marion over the last couple of months, one of the things that we decided we might have a look at is to see what's available in terms of wild foods within the city. So what we're going to do today, or this afternoon just at 12 o'clock, we're going to go from Bernardo's on a bit of a bicycle tour along the banks of the Grand Canal. So what we're going to do is we're going to just a bit of a gentle intro, spotting what plants are there, what uses there are for them, when to harvest them and stuff like that. Just general guidelines for people who might be interested in seeing what's available, what's out there, and basically what's for free. It's not just food for free though, because one of the really nice things about wild foods in general, most of them tend to be superfoods.
There's a mild pause there for good reason, because the Grand Canal in Dublin is a very long stretch of, let's say, water courses that is running through the city centre.
All the way to the Shannon.
How?
We're not cycling to the Shannon.
How does a grown man who is into butchering, let's be quite blunt about it in that sense of the game, end up as a forager along Dublin city centre? How did that end up there?
Well, can I just take exception to the grown man thing for a start?
Right? Okay. You may, yeah, there's no problem there.
But no, I suppose the key point here is, right, I mean, yeah, you're right. Okay, so those of us of a certain age would have grown up picking blackberries. Yeah. This is a very normal, or certainly was a very normal family activity. In my case, it was something that we used to do. We used to look forward to it hugely as kids because, you know what, we used to always bring my grandmother. So it was an intergenerational thing. Listen, that's just superb. In its own and on its own, that's a worthy thing to be doing. But from that, of course, we would pick the blackberries and we would make jams. And that's as simple as it was. And just without thinking about it necessarily at the time, when you had a cupboard full of jam that you'd gone out and picked and your granny'd helped you, well, listen, you're having toast for your breakfast 6 months later, you're still eating that jam. That's a really nice thing to do. It's huge value. It's really empowering, actually, to be honest with you. I say that as the now grown adult, or potentially. But one of the key points about it for me is that an awful lot of people seem to have lost that. You know, so when I go out, I'm a member of a thing called Slow Food, and we've got a wild and slow food harvest festival thing later on this year, where we go out and we just sort of give workshops to people about what to pick, how to pick it, what to look for, how to preserve it, how to cook with it. Again, I suppose one of the key points about that is to try to keep it in a traditional manner. So we're not really huge fans of the freezer. You can, of course, freeze things, but you probably will get more out of them through salting, pickling, you know, preserving with sugar, boiling. So you're back to your jams and pickles and stuff like that. This is all stuff that mostly our parents would have done, but certainly our grandparents. They did it because they had to.
We're in the middle of June as we record this and air this live from Paris Court Tennis Centre. We don't have brambles on the go, really, where they're producing fruit at this moment in time.
Yep.
We're a little bit off of that. How and what would people see that is edible along the banks? Is it the banks? Do I call it that? Where you're going,
well,
that stretch?
We're heading along the banks of the canal. Well, there's a few things. I mean, the first thing is this is the lean time of year. So this is the time of year when, you know, really you've got greens available to you. There are no fruits occurring in nature, particularly, you know. But there are fruit trees, and there are trees that bear fruit along the banks of the canal, and we're going to just sort of spot those, identify a few of those, look into those a wee bit. But at the moment, what's really good at the moment is just coming out, literally in the last 2 weeks, is the elderflower. It's a great thing. I mean, the elder tree grows pretty much in every hedgerow in the country, but there are a few along the canal. So we're going to have some elderflower cordial there for tasting and stuff as well, just to wrap it up. So the people will go, we're going to identify a few various trees. We're basically going to finish at the only elder tree I could find on this patch of the canal, and we're going to have a little taste of the cordial.
Well, let's go with the elderflower thing, because we've discussed this previously on the show beforehand. A friend of mine, Philip Murta, gave me a gift of 4 bottles of elderflower champagne. It's an incorrect term technically, but yep. Elderflower champagne nonetheless. He reneged to let me know that I should release the gas. I heard what I thought were 4 gunshots. There was glass embedded into the ceiling. Has that ever happened to you? Because for those who are not aware, it will explode if you don't let that gas out. Have you ever had that?
Yes and no.
Right, okay.
I've never had them explode upwards into the ceiling because I contain them all in boxes. The odd bottle tends to blow, yeah, for sure. But I've probably blown the base out of more bottles than the tops off them, to be honest. But listen, that's just a hazard of fermentation. I'm going to say this, that I think it's one of the things you learn pretty quickly when you start fermenting. And that's anything. That's beer, that's elder fizz, that's whatever you're having a go at yourself. You realize pretty soon that you get a huge amount of carbon dioxide and, yeah, it'll blow glass bottles clean apart.
Do you prefer, when you're out picking elderflowers, do you eat the florets? Do you only make cordial? Do you make the champagne? Do you make anything else from the elderflower?
Well, the elder is kind of the tree that just keeps giving, to be honest with you. I mean, one of the really cool things you can do with the flowers is you can make a small, like a really light, sweet batter and just make little fritters out of them. They're very sweet. They're floral. Kids love them. Listen, it's great. Elderflower works in terms of, I don't want to say it's kind of got a vanilla-y thing going on there, but it works really well in desserts. If you want to use the flowers and custards and things like this, okay, it gives a really delicate but really nice flavor. For sure, I make cordial. For sure, I make elder fizz. But the key point about the elder is you kind of have to be careful not to take all the flowers, because apart from the standard one-third rule, which we would use for picking things in general, if you take an elder flower, you won't be left with elderberries, because each flower will turn into a berry. So it's really important, if you got your favorite elder tree and it's in a nice area and it's getting a bit of sun, that you go and you pick your flowers and you pick the early ones, whatever you want to do. Nice warm day like this, when there's lots of bees buzzing around. Nice warm day. We have loads of pollen from other plants coming into the mix. You get a really interesting, nice layered flavor to your cordials or fizz or whatever you fancy.
Let's go to the one-third rule that you mentioned there, and we'll take this on a slightly different angle. There was a hullabaloo. It came to the fore where foraging was nearly being covered in every national newspaper for a period of a couple of months. It was discussed on every single radio show, including our own, albeit in an entirely different level to maybe how mainstream, I'll call it mainstream for the minute if I can. I witnessed and saw people go foraging, I say foraging inverted commas, and then decide that they actually didn't want what they picked on two levels. They didn't know what they picked, but they picked it anyway. Did you see that? Did you see that bit where it became, let's go foraging for stuff? And did you kind of put your maybe head in your hands and go, yeah, why?
You see, I know, it's kind of funny. I often think... you know, foraging is, you know, I don't know what to say about it, but I used to never call it foraging. We used to call it picking. You know, you're going out today, oh, we're picking blackberries today, or we're picking crab apples tomorrow. You know, it's funny. So foraging is something that's, you know, it's a word, and it's a bit of a buzz thing at the moment. In real terms, going back to my rule of thirds, always, 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 you pick a third for yourself, you leave a third for the birds, and you leave a third for seed, or bees, whatever it is. So really, if you go out to a tree and you see a fantastic spray of elderflowers, you really don't want to be taking any more than a third. And if you intend going back and making things with the elderberries, well, then you got to take a little bit less than that. That's just as simple as it is. But you know what? That's okay too, because one of the things, one of the really key points about going out picking stuff, it makes you really aware of seasonality. It makes you really aware of abundance, or indeed lack thereof. So, for example, the last few weeks, knowing what I was going to be doing today, I was looking at my own elder patch where I live. I live out in Bray. I was looking at my own little patches where the elderflowers grow, and I'm looking, I should be well up at this stage. You know, I'd have Facebook posts from 3-4 years ago where I would have had elderflower champagne that would be ready at this stage. I'm only going out picking the flowers now. You become aware of the fact, hang on a second, it's a little bit later this year. You know, the growth hasn't really started. You'll notice that in other, excuse me, when you go out in the autumn, you'll notice, well, actually, you know, if you're picking blackberries from a certain area each year, you'll soon twig whether there's more this year than there was last year. It's no magic, it's just a question of familiarity. I think the key point for people who are picking things they don't know, they've probably got a little bit of a lack of familiarity with what they're doing. So really, you know, I guess it's always about starting small. If you'll excuse the pun about the low-hanging fruit, I always recommend to people, listen, you can read all the books you want, but you're not going to go out in one afternoon and, inverted commas, forage for the most exotic thing going. Start with what you know. Start with the blackberries. Once you've worked a piece of hedge, and you know, okay, well, there's blackberries here, I guarantee you, by the time you've gone through every blackberry recipe you can find, there's a real chance you're going to find 7 other fruits in the same hedge. One of my all-time favorites is I make a kind of a 7-fruit jam. It's not really a jam, it's a jelly. I never really hung up on whether it's thick and easy to spread. I always think, if it tastes good, it tastes good, you know. Some people sort of get hung up on whether it sets. I like to think of easy spread jam. But you will find, in any given hedgerow in Ireland, you'll find elders, you'll find blackberries, you'll find haws, you'll find rose hips, you'll find sloes. Now, these are all there because mostly people used to grow thorny bushes to contain their animals. So it's easier to grow a thorny hedge than it was to build a fence and have to replace the wire or build a stone wall. It's just, you know, you just entwine the hedge into itself at an early stage. I'm not a hedger, but you find that these things are growing literally every square, not every square inch of every hedgerow in the country, but largely speaking, and we've a fantastic amount of hedgerows in this country, most of them bearing fruit.
Well, I know where I am doing the hedgerow walks is a huge thing, and I have a great affinity towards that and a great appreciation. I'm very, very grateful, and I think even trying to get my own hedge to regenerate, it was slightly unusual. As a guy who studied horticulture, in my head, I understand how to make a hedge better by cutting it back, where a lot of people thought that maybe because of my cutting it back that it was a negative thing to do, and it wasn't. It was to get it to regenerate as it properly should, as per the Hedge Layers Association of Ireland would maybe instruct it. Yeah. Let's go a slightly different angle on this if we can. It's something we haven't got into so far. But who is Ed Hick? Do you have a yellow car? Are you an Arsenal fan? Do you dance around in your socks at the weekend whilst cooking up some of your own ready produce and put jam upon your spicy five-spice sausages? Are you that kind of a guy?
Well, no, I'd have to defer entirely on the Arsenal thing. I'm aware there is a team called Arsenal, but that's really where my knowledge ends, I'm afraid.
I was warming to you, Ed. If this was speed dating, we would have fell out. I'm not joking. So good.
The only thing I can say with absolute certainty about football is that my long-suffering wife brought us out for my first date, our first date to a football match. So I defer to her on all things sporting. If you'd prepped that question, I could have asked it this morning, and I'd have had a reasonably competent answer to give you back.
So what's a spare time for Ed? What's not foraging, and what's not doing what we will call, let's say, work for the minute? What pays the bills, which is butchering? What's none of those things for you?
None of those things. Oh, any chance at all to goof around in the hills is great. Walking, climbing, whatever you can do on that front. Love a bit of, I live in Bray, so it's by the sea, so I love a bit of the water sports, a bit of kayaking or whatever, boating with the kids and stuff. Yeah, that's all good.
Kids, are there many?
There are three.
What ages?
Eldest is 13, 11 and 9, which kind of sounds planned, but, you know, if I can, that's spoken like a bloke, you know, like we get a say in these things.
If your wife has listened to this, I'm terribly sorry, honey. It had nothing to do with me. And we'll move swiftly on from there. What do the kids think of Dad? And let's be honest about this. We had the same conversation with Ron Finley on an earlier episode from Paris Court and Bloom Fringe. And it's sometimes that moment where you see, let's pick a fictitious conversation. You see your dad dancing, and you put your head in your hands, and you go, oh my God, Dad's dancing again. Then Dad ends up on TV, and he's the greatest rock star going, and you're kind of going, that's my dad. There's a proud moment. Have the children got to that age where they're kind of going, Dad wants us to go foraging again? Oh, my God.
They're far too young for that, I would have thought. No, they still roll their eyes at me. No. But sure, isn't that the job of children and consequently parents? I mean, come on, I also set out deliberately to embarrass them as often as I can. I mean, is that not part of the dynamic? I mean, this is how it works. At some point in time, of course, you know what I mean, you'd like to think that they'll look back and they'll sort of say, well, actually, we did this, we did that. Listen, if it's about anything for me, it's about trying to just stack up pretty much as many experiences as I can for them. I like dipping into things with them and leave it at that, and they can have a look at that. I mean, of course, we go out picking. Yes, they get dragged along to that. Often they groan, you know what? But I suppose maybe it's because of their age. You know, you're sort of tearing them away from a screen of some description. But generally you find, even when it comes to walking up mountains with them, there's always the bribe of, you know, jelly or something like that. I find that, you know, 30 seconds when they're out of the car, it's all just whooping and jumping and chasing each other and looking at butterflies, and that's all good stuff.
I'll backtrack, and you noted it, which was the rose hips and an ability to know how to make, let's say, a rose hip syrup, which has, according to the Ministry of Food from way back when, not the Jamie Oliver
not
Ministry of Food,
back,
the real Ministry of Food, let's call it that, from World War, where you've got 40 times more vitamin C and it's wrapped up and it's almost dripping out of the cloth.
They had a really interesting thing going on there. Do you know that during the Second World War in the in England and across the UK, they had these things called county herb committees? Because what they were doing, and this was collated, generally speaking, I think, through the Women's Institute, where they would go out to hedgerows and pick herbs, like wild herbs. But you got to remember that during the Second World War, of course, there was basically zero imports of any description, which is certainly where the vitamin C from the rose hip came from. But the county herb committees, I mean, there are lists in the Imperial War Museum in London. I've only seen references to this. I haven't actually read them, but there are lists of county by county how much of each herb that they had gathered that they were using for medicinal purposes when they couldn't basically import this sort of stuff because of war raging around there. The seas around the whole of the world. A lot of cases, a lot of this stuff is very recent. This isn't witchcraft from the medieval times now, you know. And up until the late 60s, I think, if not the 70s, rosehip syrup was still prescribed to pregnant women under the NHS. It's considered such a valuable source of vitamin C. And when you don't have oranges or whatever else like that that we're now used to every day, we have to think of the fact that, like, you got to make do with what you got to make do with.
Where did this all start for you? Were you 5? Were you 10? Did they bring you on walks? Did you hate them? Did you learn to love them when you got a little bit more, let's call it, mature?
No, it was just a constant, you know? It was just a constant. I mean, there were days as kids we went to the beach. There were days we went picking blackberries. I didn't know which was which. It was just, you were there with a kid. You were going out with your parents. You were going out with your granny. It was a Sunday. That's what you just did. So there was no road to Damascus moment. Probably in some respects, I would have, if you like, rekindled all that when my own kids were born and when they were old enough to toddle, and their granny would come up from Cork in particular to visit, and we would go out picking blackberries, and it's just a nice thing to do. Like, it's hard to, I don't know, I mean, come on, a bunch of people going back in a car happy after an afternoon, all with stained fingers. And
we're now at a point, I guess, in society where people are saying, and again, it's come up in conversation of recent, that, inverted commas, children don't understand. And all I can think in my head is, I listened to these conversations when I was young, and they were the older people, and the older people were looking at the, it was a child, it was almost like a dem over there kind of a thing that I didn't understand, where, although I did love gardening, I still kicked the ball in and broke half of the roses kind of thing, because they were them and we were us. And yeah. In the encouraging the next generation in and the children thing, we've got schools trying things, we've got grow your own things, we've got what we now know as foraging. And to take the very, very simple thing like composting, composting never existed when I was a child. It was just a heap down the back where you threw everything and it logically decomposed. For people who are listening to this, maybe trying to encourage the next wave of nouveau, let's call them foraging experts, for want of a better description, people who will appreciate what we have in this beautiful Dublin city to give, what is right there on our doorsteps, what words of advice do you have to them? Because you seem to love it with everything that you are, all of your heart.
Well, you see, I think it's all about reward, isn't it? Do you know, I mean, you know, if your kids go out and they're picking something and you have a nice elderflower cordial at the end of it, I mean, look, it's something you've made yourself. Of course it contains sugar. It has to contain sugar, otherwise it wouldn't be a syrup. But there's a very tangible reward for that. No more and no less than if you plant strawberries. If you plant strawberries and the kids water them and, you know, chase the odd pest away and one thing or another, if your kids can go out and pick a strawberry, well, that's the reward. That's what it's about. You know, I mean, it's just a bit of connection. You know, if you were to fly up into a helicopter and look down, you would see that the people who go out picking or the people who grow their own veg and stuff like that, I'm not saying they're intrinsically happier. I'm not saying that at all. But I do think there's a level of empowerment that people get from that is really, it's a bit intangible, but you know, it's really important that people can go out and just take that little bit of charge. I picked this. I grew this. Have some of this. It's mine. A lot of people will roll their eyes and sort of say, oh, God, the zeal of the convert. But I think at the end of the day, anything that puts you a little bit more in connection with what you're eating has to be a good thing, because it's really hard to imagine anything, and I mean anything, more intimate than the act of eating, because you're putting something inside you. We talk about clothes that hang on the outside. We talk about what flavor shampoo we'd like to wash our hair with, but you're actually putting something inside of your body. I think the more control you have over that, or the more input you have into that, simply the more empowering it is for you as a person. Because you know what? A huge amount of what's going on in modern world, it's not that it's deliberately designed to take that away from you, but the easy option is to surrender that sort of level of control. So go out there, pick, grow, enjoy.
I had a gardening book, and I raised this quote when I spoke at Christ Church Cathedral 2 years ago at the Dublin Garden Festival. And the opening line of the book was how to make your own garden. And it said, start by digging the ground 2 foot deep. And I thought to myself, that is just too much hardship. It was also in my head, horticulturally illogic as well, to an extreme point. A separate book then noted that the, I don't want to misquote it, but that the British character liked the sound of its own spade. And I think there was something that people felt was rewarding about breaking your back and breaking into a sweat and literally putting your body under physical pressure. When you come to something like, again, to use the term loosely, foraging, but foraging nonetheless, you don't have to do any sowing. There's no growing. There's no, you just got to know where to go and pick it.
Yeah, but there's a lot in that. Now, I'm not going to give you any secret locations here, right? But I have a particular spot where I go pick frockens. So frockens, they're the first wild berry that fruits in Ireland. Normally it's in and around the August bank holiday weekend. In fact, the last Sunday in July, which is Reek Sunday, is also Frocken Sunday. Now, look, I don't know too much about this. I'm not a historian, but I gather it goes back to pagan times. But it's certainly the first wild berry that we have. I have a spot that I go to where, but it's about a 2 hour walk in from the road. It's in the mountains. So you're right, I don't have to dig any ground. Geez, I cover ground getting the stuff, you know. So, you know, it's not a supermarket shelf either. You can't just go out and say, right, I have a recipe here for blackberry jam. I'm going to pick 5 pounds of blackberries. Good luck with that. There's an afternoon for you. And then you've got to compound that by the fact that you find that there are certain years, I'm trying to think now, you have a better handle on this than me, but was it 3 years ago or 4 years ago? We had a hard frost in May. Now, I know guys who are commercial apple farmers, and they lost about 25% of their crop, I think, that year. And it wasn't just here in Ireland. It was Wales, south of England, the north of France. You know, it was just a cold spell. Well, that obviously takes its toll on wild food as well. So we find ourselves, you know, different situations, different times, different seasons. Stuff is there, stuff isn't there. I think the ingenuity that, you know, our grandparents would have had in and around that is, you've got to move on to something else. Really old saying that I'm going to wrap up with is just, when all fruit fails, welcome the haw.
Welcome the haw indeed. If people want to get in touch, Ed, you are at Ed Hick on Twitter. Is there a website if they want to get have
there's
it?
There's a website with lots of templates for wild food, lots of instructions where to pick, how to pick, recognition and recipes. wildandslow.com.
wildandslow.com. Ed Hick, it has been a real genuine pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Delighted. Gurmila Math.
Thank you very much. We'll be back in about 10-15 minutes for episode 3 of The Sod Show. At Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodShow and sodshow.com for the back catalogue. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Ed. Take care, Sloan.
Every day.